Welcome to the Crystal Pain Show, where we help you embrace your life right where you are and give you practical steps to get where you want to go. Whether you are in your car, folding laundry, cooking, cleaning, or maybe even just enjoying a cup of coffee and a few minutes of quiet, we're so glad you're joining us today. Here's your host, wife, mom of six kids, foster mom, entrepreneur, and author, Crystal Pain. Welcome to another episode of the Crystal Pain Show. Today in studio, I have an author whose books I have read for years. I remember on a plane years and years ago, I don't even know how I got this book, but I was reading this book of his life and I was so deeply touched through his words. And we were talking ahead of time. I have read four of his five books. So now I have an assignment that I need to go read the fifth book, but Ian Morgan Cron has a brand new book out, The Fix, How the 12 Steps Offer a Surprising Path of Transformation for the Well-Adjusted, the Down and Out, and Everyone in Between. And I actually first heard of this book shortly after, the publicist had contacted me, but then my mastermind group, Megan Hyatt Miller, was leading a session and she had just, I think, interviewed Ian on their podcast, and this book and what he had shared radically changed her life and she just couldn't stop talking about it. And so she was just sharing how it had impacted her. My ears perked up and I was like, this is such good stuff. We've got to get him on the podcast. So Ian, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
This book, I feel like every single person, there's not one person in the whole world that could not benefit from this book. And you share so vulnerably in it. You're so honest. And I just appreciate your willingness to put yourself out there. Was that really hard for you to open up and share?
Harder than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. I'm generally a fairly vulnerable, transparent person. Mm-hmm. But this was a very tender book to write. But I didn't know how else to talk about the power of the 12 steps apart from against the backdrop of my own life, right? Like what difference have they made in my life, right? How revolutionary have they been in my own spiritual journey? I had a lot of sleepless nights thinking, oh my gosh, I have really opened the kimono here, and I'm really revealing things about myself that, ultimately I think will be helpful. I feel like I'm 64 years old. I'm really not interested anymore in impressing my platform. Mm. I'm really not interested anymore in, curating an image for other people to go ooh and ah over. What I've always been more interested in is deepening and improving people's lives. And sometimes vulnerability is the price of admission for that. Mm.
Okay, so I have to ask, was there a time when you were wanting to impress your platform? Or have you always been the kind of person who you're just okay with vulnerability as the price of admission?
Well, I have a very strong three wing. I'm a four with a strong three wing, right? And so, of course, there were seasons of my life where I was like, holy smokes, I have a public persona and I have to protect and better broadcast that person. It didn't last very long. I had placed a high premium on authenticity. When I did do it, I always felt kind of icky. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I never did it in a way that was terribly misleading or anything like mm-hmm. that. But I always did feel like self-marketing wasn't my gift. You know, I've met and known so many people who are shameless when it comes to self-promotion and self-marketing. And every time I see it, I go, oh boy, oh, you know, it makes me really nervous. Mm-hmm. So I do aspire to be the truest version of who I am with people. And, sometimes that's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But you just have to pull up your socks and endure it. Because almost always, being appropriately vulnerable with people, and there's inappropriate ways of being vulnerable, and actually manipulative ways of being vulnerable, being myself, revealing that which is best about me and that which is those things which have been a great struggle, that's where people get helped. They don't get helped by seeing somebody that is a sort of a cartoon cutout of themselves. Mm-hmm. That, and you know this thing, right? You get on social media, you see people all the time, right? And you're like, that is not who that person is. Mm-hmm. Like there's, that is some kind of representation that this person has created in order to win people over. Mm-hmm. And that may be for making sales, for doing whatever. But every time I see it, my radar goes off and I'm like, I don't think so.
Mm. This leads into, so you talk in the book some, I could really relate to, I was telling you before we started recording that I've really struggled with an approval idol is what I call it. Just really seeking after applause, accolades, approval from others, and not necessarily in a sense of on social media so much, but in my real life, mm-hmm. in relationships. Like I wanted people to like me and think well of me. So I would twist myself into a pretzel, be who I thought they wanted me to be. And you kind of allude to you have experienced some of those same feelings of like wanting approval from others. Did it exhibit itself like that or was it something else?
Yeah, I mean, winning others, earning relationship, seeking approval. You know, these have been themes in my life, much less now than when I was younger. And part of it is just born of a childhood that mm-hmm. where there wasn't a lot of approval or the experience of being seen. And so, but over time, I have, on my spiritual path, been able to really let go of a lot of that. I heard a great quote the other day. You should write this down. It was Quincy Jones, the music producer, mm-hmm. And he was talking about his friendship with Ray Charles. And they had a saying between them where Ray Charles, and he would say, not one ounce of my self-worth depends on your approval of me.
Mm.
And I really took that to heart. I immediately wrote it down. Not one ounce of my self-worth depends on your approval of me. And I think that's a really healthy place to get, right? Not when it's too, I mean, obviously we want to maintain a warmth and a kindness and all these things. But I love that idea that, you know, I stand on a really positive, clear sense of self. And I am not addicted to other people's approval to bolster my suspicion that I'm not worthy, you know?
How do you get to that place? Like, how yeah. did you get there? Because that is like the million-dollar question.
Okay, here's the bad news. I had someone recently, and I say this a lot to my coaching clients, right? They'll ask me a question like that, and I'll go, it's going to take a minute. It really is. It's going to take a minute. Life is going to happen for a while before you can reach some of the goals that you have. And frankly, you're going to get to 60 something and you're going to look back and go, oh my gosh, I have so many of the same insecurities I had at 14. They're still here, but you regard them differently. You hold them differently. You are kinder to yourself. You are more compassionate about the fact that, yeah, you carry these vulnerabilities within yourself to ways of being in the world that are not very skillful and don't create a lot of happiness for you. But it takes a while mm-hmm. and intentionality and focus, you know, before you kind of rewire to the point that you're like free of it.
Mm. So for me, it was a recognition of the problem like that. And it took a long time to get to that place of just recognizing that's what I was doing. And then really a rewiring of my brain.
Yeah.
And that was a 2-year process of recognizing all of these lies that I would just let live up there and swirl around that I had believed were truths. They were the labels that I wore and what I led with. And to start calling them out as lies. Like that was, it was really hard because I was like, at first I was like, no, that's actually true. Like if someone actually knew who I was, they wouldn't like me. Like if someone really gets to know me, they're not going to like me, and just different lies like that. But the more that I said, no, that's actually a lie. And what is the truth? And then replacing lies with truth. But you're right. It is not an overnight sort of situation.
No, it isn't. I just always try to manage people's expectations. You know what I mean? I'm always like the spiritual journey. Like there's a great quote by an author I like who says that spiritual transformation is the slowest of all human movements. Mm. It's slow. You know, in fact, there's a great prayer by a guy, a Catholic priest named Pierre de Chardin. He begins this one prayer. He says, trust in the slow work of God. Mm. Trust in the slow work of God. So everyone's, you know, unfortunately, everyone looks for hacks. And there's no hacks in the spiritual life. They just don't exist. You know, it's, you're going to have to walk the path as it is laid out. And there are no shortcuts, not at least to really meaningful change. Mm.
As you were saying that, I was wondering, so do you think like our fixes that we go to is almost because we don't have the patience to go through the process of that slow journey of spiritual transformation? Like we just want... We want the change. So, or what do you think?
Yeah, it's a toxic hack. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about fixes, right, the book is called The Fix because the book is about how all human beings struggle with addiction, whether it's mild or severe, right, on the continuum. Regardless of where you are on the continuum, all addictions diminish you, right? And you used the word idol a few moments ago, and I'm glad you did, right? Because addictions in the spiritual lexicon, we would say are idols. In the early church, they would have called them attachments. Mm-hmm. Only in modern times have we started calling them addictions, right? This is part of the human condition. They're just part of the human condition. Now, how do they happen? Well, it's complicated, but to answer your question as clearly as possible, all of us have at our baseline an uneasiness, a kind of inquietude. It's always there. I call it the feeling of not at homeness in ourselves, in the world, right? It's like this feeling of incompleteness, mm-hmm. that we're not quite whole. And there's always this kind of thing inside. Now, that can also show up as anxiety, depression, right? Lots of things. And human beings just don't like discomfort. They don't like dis-ease. So what do? They find shortcuts to soothe themselves and to relieve that distress. That may come in the form of an addiction to eating. I work with people all the time in that category. Could be alcohol. Could be drugs. It could be sports betting. It could be perfectionism. It could be codependency, being addicted in relationships, and the list goes on and on. Workaholism is a huge one that I work with. These are fixes, right? These are self-prescribed treatment plans, right? It's like, gee, every time I do that, this pain goes away. And then the brain goes, I like that. Let's do more of that. Like, you know, and then it sets up an addictive cycle that has consequences down the road. Mm.
So do you think that it's from childhood? Like, where does it first start?
Yeah. Well, first of all, just to let you know, addictions are insanely complicated, right? Some people say, oh, addictions, it's all about trauma. And I go, yes, and many other things. There are genetics involved, neurobiology involved, family history involved. There are even economic and social factors that get played into how an addiction can get formed, right? So it's multi-pronged. Clearly, childhood trauma, conditioning, and there's some personality elements to it in terms of like there are certain personalities that do struggle more with impulse control, right? Decision-making. There's just so many things. But it's just what humans do to feel more at home in themselves, in their own skins, and in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And I just remember, so I go to 12-step meetings frequently, not because I need to. I'm not hanging on by my eyelids. You know, I'm not thinking about substances every day at all, actually. But one of the things you hear when people are speaking about their own journey is, and you hear this I mean, 90% of the time, they'll say, the first time I took a drink, all the chatter in my brain stopped. Mm. And for the first time in my life, I felt at home in the world. Mm. I felt at peace with myself. I thought I had found the Holy Grail. And people oftentimes don't have those kinds of dramatic experiences outside of substances, but same thing goes for workaholism, right? Yeah, the same thing goes for eating addiction. Same thing goes, I don't know, sports betting, whatever your thing is, right? I met this man and suddenly it's like I found the meaning of life. And I discovered that having a love addiction, right, or a relationship addiction, and I couldn't live without this person. And I obsessed about this person. And I worried about them leaving me. That just sounds like someone who's got like an addiction, right? We have to be compassionate with ourselves, right? Like, so let me give you an example. People say this to me all the time. They'll say, my brother Bob has a drinking problem. And I'm like, okay, but let me reframe it. Your brother Bob actually has a drinking solution. Mm. It's not a problem. It's a solution. The drinking is a symptom of a problem, but it is not itself the problem. When Bob is, in recovery and he stops drinking, then he has to then turn his attention toward the problems that underwrote his behavior. Does it make sense?
Yes.
And then what happens is it expels the need. Once that happens, it expels the need for anything else to help them, right? They're just learning how to live life, right? On life's terms, right? And part of living life on life's terms is learning to live with inner distress in a way that's healthy for you, mm-hmm. not in a way that's self-destructive.
So do you feel that every person has an addiction?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for the people that are
addictions,
saying, addictions,
yeah,
yes.
People don't have one.
Okay.
Trust me, they have multiples.
I was going to say mine for sure. I'm sure I have others, but the approval idol. And then also for me, it's workaholism. Like mm-hmm. those are the two things. And I feel like for me, for years, workaholism, like I would go to work. I would tell myself like this, I'm a hard worker. Like I have a strong work ethic. I'm very disciplined. I'm very diligent. I'm not a quitter. You know, it was like all the things that I was telling myself to justify, but really it was numbing. Like you were talking about the other things that I didn't want to have to deal with.
Yes. Right. Yeah. It was a symptom of the problem, but not mm-hmm. the problem itself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so let's just define an addiction, right? Like an addiction is any unhealthy relationship one might have with a person. And people have always looked at me like, really? I was like, oh yeah, it's called codependency. And relationship and love addictions are really powerful. So an unhealthy relationship with a person, a behavior, that's called a process addiction. So that's eating, sex, porn, all that stuff. Or with a substance, right? Drugs, alcohol, et cetera, that have mood altering effects. So when you're working hard, it has mood altering effects. I'm killing it. And look at the money coming in. And this validates me, makes me feel good about myself, right? But it also has negative consequences. It's hurting my marriage. I'm not spending enough time with my kids. It's hurting my health. It's, on and on and on. Well, that's a classic addiction, right? So the 12 steps, which is what the book is about, is this spiritual design for living that helps people have a spiritual awakening of sufficient force that it renders unnecessary your need for whatever your particular fix is, because now God is at the center, mm-hmm. which is who you were looking for all along anyway,
mm-hmm.
right? That's what you were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
You were just looking for it in these misguided shortcuts, right? But the peace that you want, and isn't that, I mean, honestly, like when people say to me, what do you really want, right? People often will say, or I will say, peace. I want to be at peace with myself, with God and others. And that is essentially what the 12 steps are meant to do. And for your listeners, it's important to know this. Let's say you cannot cop to an addiction. Let's just say you think, I am the most well-adjusted person. I don't have any addictions. Okay. Let's just say that's true. This book is really good for them because regardless of where you are on the addiction continuum, working a 12-step program, which has literally saved the lives of tens of millions of people, right, who are once deemed completely hopeless, right, would make your life so much better that everybody should do a program. Mm-hmm. Everybody. Like, do you want a better life? Do you want a closer relationship with God? Do you want a better relationship with yourself and with others? Work that program, and it will give you a path that will be revolutionary for you.
Whether your child is trying to catch up, stay sharp, or get a head start for the fall, IXL can make learning a seamless part of summer. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're brushing up on math or diving into social studies, it covers math, language arts, science, and social studies from pre-K through 12th grade with content that's engaging, personalized, and yes, actually fun. It's the perfect tool to keep learning going without making it feel like school. Silas used IXL in his math class a few years ago, and he really loved how he could work at his own pace, and he loved that he was able to see instant feedback on how he was doing. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies show that kids who use IXL score higher on tests. It will work for any of your kids because IXL uses smart technology to tailor support to each child's level, personality, and learning pace, which I love. It also saves time because one subscription gets you everything. There's one site for all the kids in your home, whether they're pre-K up to 12th grade. And also, my favorite part, you save money because if your child is struggling, this is such a great investment. A single hour of tutoring costs more than a month of IXL. Don't miss out. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Crystal Payne Show listeners can get an exclusive 20% off your IXL membership when you sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. That's right. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet that they build for you. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for new to you styles. I have loved getting to use Armoire. It has challenged me to try some new styles, and y'all, I have found some jeans that I have absolutely loved. In fact, I ended up buying them because I wore them so much that I was like, you know what? This is not a style I would have chosen for myself, but they picked out something that fit me so perfectly, and I just was like, I gotta have this in my closet, and I never would have known that. So I love that it challenges you to try some new things, and you get to try it out risk-free because you don't have to buy it. You can send it back and trade it in for something else if you find that that doesn't work for you. So right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/crystal. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/crystal to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
Tell us how you were first introduced to the 12 steps. Was this something that you did years ago? Was it more recent? Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I was first introduced to the 12 steps. I was a young man. I had a drinking problem and I had a drinking solution and I was 27. Mm-hmm. Attended a 12-step recovery program for a couple of years. My desire to drink went away miraculously. And then over the next several decades, I was kind of, maybe I would show up every couple of years in a meeting or two or three times and then wouldn't, you know, just, I call it auditing the class, you know, I wasn't taking it for credit. I was just auditing. And then in that 2019 or 20, 2000, 19, I guess. I had a relapse around COVID, went to treatment, was reintroduced to the 12 steps, and now I was taking it for credit. Mm-hmm. And because addictions, they don't actually go away. They just kind of, you know, if you let that cat out of the cage again, it'll run. You know what I mean? So, and then I was like, oh my gosh, the steps are really amazing. And I was also looking at them and experiencing through an older man's eyes now, right? Mm. And I was like, and why doesn't everybody do this? Like, this has brought me into a relationship with God I didn't know existed before. This is amazing. And I wanted everybody to have access to it. And hence the book. Mm.
So you talked about how addictions don't go away, which that could be kind of discouraging, you know, for people who are thinking, well, I want to be done with this. You know, I don't want to have this always the potential that it could come back. As you look back and see your relapse, were there things that led to that? Like, I'm thinking, like, how do we not fall back into those really bad patterns again?
Well, I mean, I didn't have a program of recovery like the 12 steps mm-hmm. that I was continually working that would have put guardrails around it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Listen, addictions don't go away partly because of the way your brain is wired, right? Like if you have an addiction, it has rewired the brain and you can be in recovery from that addiction and not use or engage in a particular behavior. But if you don't keep your eye on it, if you let it out of the bag again, that brain goes, oh, I remember this. Mm. Let's do this more again, right? And they tend to be, we talk about addictions as being progressive. So you won't 20, 30 years later start off where you left off. You'll be that much further down the road, right? So, you know, I look at that misadventure of mine and, you know, 5 years ago. And I actually now see it as a gift. Mm. And in God's funny way, it became an invitation to just this beautiful new awareness of his presence in my life. It gave me some humility that I needed. It was such a gift. It has become I remember when I was in treatment, I'm like, oh my gosh, what an idiot, you know? And I thought, as we often do in these situations, like, oh my gosh, I'm finished. What an idiot. What a loser, blah, blah, blah. And if this guy who had many years of sobriety said, you know, your best years are now ahead. Mm-hmm. Like this experience will eventually become of great service to other people if you follow the path. And that's turned out to be true.
Mm, I love that. Okay, so as we think of the 12 steps, and I know we don't have time to dig into all of them. That's why people need to get a copy of your book. But some of them, what I was not sure on, because I haven't ever been to a 12-step meeting before, is it the kind of thing...
So first of all, you need to go.
Yes, you're convincing me.
Go to an open AA meeting.
Okay.
All right. Do you have a friend in recovery? Any friends in recovery?
Not currently. Okay. Yes.
You could go to an open. You just ought to go to a couple because they're magic, right? They're really magical. I took a friend recently who's doesn't identify as a person with any kind of substance use disorder. And he, at the end of the meeting, he was still sitting in the chair when everyone else was leaving. And I'm like, I went over and I said, buddy, what's going on for you right now? And he's like, why can't church be like this? Mm. He said, the presence of God here was so amazing, but also hearing these stories and the courage and the vulnerability and the laughter. He was so surprised by all the laughter in those rooms. Because it is, there's a lot of laughter on the journey of recovery. It's not a bunch of people sitting around, you know, like hanging on for dear life, you know. I mean, we do have certain people that struggle more than others, but you know, it's just a beautiful experience. So back to your question. Sorry, that was a little editorial.
So my question was, I was wondering, as you went through these steps, so then is it the kind of thing like you keep going through them? Okay, so because for instance, like when you talk about sharing, you know, writing down all of, you can say it better than me, but like some of the steps I was like, okay, so are you doing this multiple times? So tell us a little bit about the steps and then kind of the process.
So here's the genius of the steps. I won't quote all the steps, right? But steps 1 to 3 are about mending, deepening your relationship with God. That's where you got to start. Okay. Steps 4 through 7 are really about how do I mend and deepen my relationship with myself? And then 8 and 9 is how do I mend and deepen relationships with others, particularly those people in my life who I've hurt, right? And then 10 through 12 is how do I create a lifestyle, a daily lifestyle that supports my desire to live in harmony with God, myself, and others moving forward, right? Now, the first time you go through the steps, you're going to do them in order, usually with a sponsor or with a book like The Fix. You're going to go through them in order. And then, you know, maybe every couple of 2-3 years, you'll do them again with a sponsor or with somebody. You know what I mean? Like you just go through them again. First time, you got to really do them, follow directions, get all the way through it. I love what my sponsor once said to me. He said, you know, when you've done the steps a while, eventually the numbers fall away and you're just drawing on the wisdom of them all day long, right? Like, so even on my way here, right? It's a 30-minute ride to here from East Nashville. I'm on 65 and I'm saying the third step prayer, which is, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Help me to overcome my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help with thy love, thy power, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And I was thinking about our interview. Okay, God, I want to be useful today. I want to say something that will actually be of encouragement, correction, loving way of just presenting this material to people who are going to listen. That's doing the third step. Now, I didn't think to myself, I'm going to do the third, you know, but I've been doing these long enough now, right? Mm-hmm. Or step 10 says, continue to take personal inventory. In other words, keep watching what's going on here inside you and make amends, you know, when we've done something we shouldn't have done, right? So not long ago, I was in a coffee shop and I was not on my best that day, had a snappy encounter with the woman behind the counter. And 20 minutes later, I drove back and I went up to her and I said, you know what? I was not my best self 20 minutes ago. And I just came back to apologize. Is there anything I can do to make that up to you? That's step 10. So I'm just moving through the day, living by, these are all gospel principles, right? They're, you know, it's not nothing but gospel principles in the 12 steps. I'm just trying to live that way all the time. So the steps are kind of in the background running all the time. And I'm just drawing from their wisdom hour to hour.
So I have to ask, the going back and asking, you know, her apologize and all that, is that something that you would have done years ago?
Or no.
Is that, so that's a much more recent thing.
Yeah, no, I probably would have been like, well, that wasn't so great. And, but you know, she was kind of a jerk, you know, whatever. But I wouldn't have thought to myself, it is important to keep your side of the street clean. Go back and sweep your side of the street with this person. And, you know, it's so amazing what happens when you start doing these sorts of things. I did this, a friend of mine just did this with a Walmart person. There was like, you know, whatever, and had to go back and say, I'm sorry, I was so snippy. And the person got teary and was like, do you know you're the only customer who's ever done this?
Wow.
This is just, and what is, you know, I mean, so I don't presume that all of your listeners identify as Christians, right? But in my faith tradition, I'm told, like, if you've got outstanding business with somebody, hurry up and go fix it. Like, because you carry that. You carry that wound, right? Inside of you. And we want to live as people who are kind and compassionate and loving, who are modeling this way of life in the world, and who are just keeping their house in order.
Mm. I remember reading a book from a woman who she died from cancer. She wrote it when she was dying. And one of the things, I don't remember anything out from the book other than keep short accounts.
Yes.
And I just, that's always stuck with me of, you know, if you have that nagging feeling of, I didn't handle that interaction correctly, or I snapped at someone, or I was not kind to my husband, or, you know, whatever, to humble yourself and go back. And it does something for you. Like, yeah, there's just something that...
And them.
Yes.
And them.
Yes.
Right? These are always potentially magical moments. Mm. Only on the very rarest of occasions have I gone back to apologize or to try and make amends to somebody when they've rebuffed me and said, forget it, I don't want anything to do with you. That's very rare. Most of the time, people soften. You see their face soften. You see their shoulders go down. And the sense of relief and like, this is important and it's beautiful and it's how humans should live.
Mm. Yeah, it's so good. Okay, we are almost out of time, but I want you to get to share. You have a new assessment that you were telling. And so this is kind of changing gears,
okay,
but
all right.
I want to talk about your Enneagram assessment because you wrote a book, actually two books that are on Enneagram. You can tell us a little bit about those and then tell us about your brand new assessment.
Yeah, so the first book I wrote on the Enneagram was called The Road Back to You. And then the next one
which is so good, by the way.
Yeah, well, thanks. And then The Story of You. And I love the Enneagram. It's this personality typing system, for those who don't know, that teaches there are 9 basic personality styles in the world, right? Online, you find all these assessments that are just garbage, right? Sometimes they're just clickbait. Sometimes they're just, I want your email, you know, whatever. And they're so misleading because there's no science in them. Now, I'm a therapist. I've studied psychometrics and statistics and all the things in graduate school. I know how complicated it is to actually create a valid, reliable assessment that properly types people, tells them their subtypes, tells them their wings, gives them a 20-page report on, you know, who they, all that stuff. So we spent 2 years, I worked with a research psychologist, he's an affiliate faculty at Harvard, and, you know, he's a genius at this stuff, right? He's an expert in, you know, statistics and measurements, right? And we put together this assessment. We spent, I hate to tell you how much we spent on it. It was very considerable resources so that there would be a gold standard out there. So it's called the Typology Institute Enneagram Assessment. People can go to my website, ianmorgancron.com, and just hit assessments and they can learn about it.
Okay. I'm so excited about that because actually we're in the process of hiring on 8 new people to our team. And part of the process is we have them take an Enneagram assessment. And we basically have started just saying, have you taken the Enneagram test before? Do you know your type? And because the tests online just are not, you know, we would have to hold up all of their work and our interaction with them and be like, does this seem? And so often then we would have them, we've had like in the second phase, we'd have them take another Enneagram test and they'd get a different result.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm really, really excited that, because I've always just thought there's not really a test out there that is accurate. You have to read the books and like work with somebody who knows and everything.
So here's the thing about assessments, right? No assessment's perfect, especially self-report assessments, though in psychology, we use these assessments all the time in the clinical settings, right? So they all have margins of error. You just need to find one that has the smallest margins of error, right? And that requires a test that has been expertly put together by PhD level people who only do that for a living.
Right? And aren't just doing it to get an email address,
they're
right?
They're not just doing it to get an email address. And so I can't tell you, I've recently had 4 or 5 just in the last 2 weeks, because it's only been available for the last 3 months. Mm-hmm. I've had 4 or 5 people in the last 2 weeks who called me or emailed me saying, oh my gosh, I always typed as a 3, but as it turns out, I'm a 1 to 1 5. And when I read the 1 to 1 5 description, I burst into tears.
Wow.
So this is why I hate that people are out there like creating garbage, because it's so misleading and harmful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what a waste of time it is for you. You send people out to take some test that comes back with a bad result. Then you're trying to deal with someone who comes off as an 8, but actually they're a 1 to 1 4. And you're actually not dealing with the person you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so it's just at that point, it's not helpful. It's just misleading. Mm-hmm. So that's why I love the new assessment.
Well, thank you for putting so much resources and time and effort and energy into that, because I just think of how many millions of people it is going to impact by having these correct. And also your subtype, because for me, that was only in recent that I've learned about that. And it has helped me understand myself so much more.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You're down into a whole different. I always tell people, if you know your type, you have a low definition picture. Once you know your wing, slightly higher definition. Once you know your subtype, much higher definition picture of what's going on. So, you know, is it helpful just to know your type and have a low def picture? Sure, absolutely. No problem. But if you really want to dial it in, you have to get down to deeper layers of the Enneagram.
Well, I just appreciate so much all the work that you have done. I was telling you before we started recording that the road back to you really helped our marriage. It's helped me to really understand my husband. When I was reading that book, all of a sudden, all these light bulbs started going off in my head, and it's helped me to be able to relate to him better, to just understand how he processes things better, and to love him better because of that. So you have directly impacted our marriage in really profound ways. And I'm just so grateful for that. I'm also so grateful for your willingness to put yourself out there in a very vulnerable way in this book in order to impact so many lives and to use what someone could look at this season of your life that could feel like such a awful, terrible thing, and you to see it as a gift so that you can not only have changed your life, but now go out and change so many other lives. So for the Enneagram assessment, go to ianmorgancron.com, and he has the assessment right on there. You also have a podcast that is all about Enneagram. So for people who would love to learn more about that. And then you have some other books that I highly recommend as well. You're just a really great writer. We didn't even get into, I have so much underlined in this book, so much dog-eared. And also, you're really funny. I love when an author says such hard-hitting truths and shares vulnerably, but then weaves their sarcasm and humor all through. It makes a book. You're just an incredible writer. God has really given you a gift there, and I appreciate that you're sharing it with the world. And thank you for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. For more great resources, please visit crystalpayne.com